When I met Eitan Gonen in Los Angeles in November of 2023, he was wearing a shirt with his 23-year-old daughter Romy's face on it. It had been a little over a month since Romy had been shot and kidnapped from a music festival by Palestinian terrorists, and Eitan was touring the globe, speaking to anyone who would listen to keep the spotlight on his captive daughter. I remember every word he said, how Romy was always smiling, how her positive energy brightened every room she entered, her tight bond with her siblings, and of course, his determination to bring her home alive. An unthinkable 14 months later, Romy Gonen, now 24, along with a dozen other young Israeli men and women, has finally returned from the depths of the Hamas tunnels to her family's loving embrace, alive and whole, once again brightening the room, both hers and those of countless Jewish families around the world. A brief moment of elation, relief, and light in a time of unbearable darkness. And therein lies the complexity. Joy and terror, gratitude and fury, comfort and angst. All these conflicting and contradictory emotions swirling around us all at once. The night Romy, Emily Damari, and Doron Steinbrecher came home, I was at dinner with friends, and one of them began to cry. Not tears of joy, but of frustration, or maybe futility. Yes, the reunions were ecstatically wonderful, but the big picture remains so grim. Dozens of hostages still captive. Thousands of armed terrorists flooding the streets of Gaza, triumphant. Millions of Palestinians still being raised to hate their Jewish neighbors. Who could be happy at a time like this? It actually reminds me of a Kobe Bryant moment, as many things often do. After winning Game 2 of the 2009 NBA Finals, presumably a moment of celebration, he arrived for his press conference completely stone-faced, and he was asked by an incredulous reporter, "Aren't you happy?" To which Kobe responded, "What's there to be happy about? Job's not finished." Job finished? I don't think so. This is an impossibly complicated moment to process. There are layers upon layers of powerful emotions sprouting like weeds from each element of this unimaginable experience. We are jubilant at the return of these young women, some literally snatched from their beds in their pajamas over 470 days ago. And yet, we are furious as we watch them forced to don fake military garb, smile and wave to the camera to grease the wheels of the anti-Israel propaganda machine that so many Islamists and useful idiots in the West hungrily consume. We celebrate their return and shudder to think of what they've been forced to endure day after wretched day for so many long months. We celebrate their return and scream at the injustice of it all, that they were so violently taken to begin with, that so many remain still in captivity, that many have already died there. We celebrate their return and rage at the world for not caring enough, for lacking the moral clarity and courage to demand their release long ago. We celebrate their return and brace ourselves for the future untold horrors that may befall us at the hands of the dozens of newly freed murderers and terrorists, including one who planned a 2003 bus bombing that my friend Sari survived while 17 other passengers did not. We celebrate their return and pray desperately that the others will return too, even as we learn the horrible news that 8 of the innocent people on the list are already dead. We celebrate their return and wonder in agony why it took so long. Who else might have been saved if Israel had hit harder, if Netanyahu had moved faster, if there hadn't been a U.S. presidential election? If. We celebrate an end to the fighting, a desperately needed respite for both sides. For Israel, a nation enduring the longest war of its existence, even as we grimly understand that more fighting is now assured. More Israeli sons and daughters will be forced to leave their families and put their lives on the line. More Palestinian civilians will be cavalierly thrown into harm's way as the true villains hide underground. More anti-Jew and anti-Israel haters around the world will gleefully rejoin the fray, if they've even left it at all. When I interviewed former Deputy Mayor of Jerusalem, Flor Hassan Nahum, back in episode 5, she said she wanted a conclusive end to the war, to Hamas's reign, once and for all, so that in 5 years, when her son turns 18, it won't be his turn to go to war. Humanity has failed Flor, and her son, and every family like theirs, though of course, who knows what the next 5 years will bring. I have no words of wisdom for you today, my friends. I can only offer validation. Whatever you are feeling right now is right. All of it. It is an unbelievably fucked up situation. Hezbollah is weakened, Syria collapsed, Iran in retreat, and yet Hamas terrorists proudly walk the streets of Gaza as thousands return to the north, territory over which so many Palestinian and Israeli lives were lost. And for what? Was any of it worth it? Was any of it right? Yes and no. So give yourself some grace. Honor your feelings, whatever they might be, and know that someone, somewhere, is feeling the exact same way, however impossible that jumble of feelings may be to describe. As has been the case with each chapter of this nightmare saga, at least we are in this together. And if that doesn't brighten your day, maybe thinking about Romy and her family will. This is the 20th episode of Being Jewish with me, Jonah Platt. So I've talked a lot of shit about Gen Z before, definitely on social media, I think maybe on this show. But in prepping for today's episode, I realized how unfair and lame that is. All prejudice comes from some combination of fear, jealousy, ignorance, or bitterness towards some group we are not a part of. And we express our displeasure in a guarded, nasty, totally unproductive way. And so it is with deepest pride and greatest pleasure that my first Gen Z guest on the show is one who will undoubtedly change some of your preconceptions of her and her peer group. At 24 years old, she is a social media megastar with 50 million followers across platforms, multiple TV appearances, song releases, and a book to her young name. Maybe that's what you might have guessed, but she is also genuine, grounded, uniquely talented, and an unabashed advocate for Israel and the Jewish people, something we were told Gen Zers didn't do. She does, and with millions watching. I'm so glad she's here. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Arielle Martin.
Thank you so much. That was such an intro. Oh my goodness.
You know, it's all true, every word of it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Psyched that you're here. Online, you are known as Baby Arielle.
Yes, I am.
That's your moniker. Mm-hmm. What about offline? Like, are you Baby Arielle? Like, who are you right now? Who am I talking to?
Offline, I am Arielle Martin. Arielle, I added Rebecca into my bio after, it's my middle name, after October 7th. I was like, okay, Arielle Martin, I hate to say it doesn't sound Jewish enough, but I was like, I need people to know. And so I added Arielle Rebecca and I changed my email too to like Arielle Rebecca. I was like, I have to put it out there. But
are they the same person, Baby Arielle and Arielle, or is there like a persona to the baby?
That's such a good question. You know, I think when I first started social media, Baby Arielle was a separate person. Like online, when I started on Musical.ly, I did a lot of like very in your face Musical.ly videos with big facial expressions and like super hardcore into it. I did a lot of like dancing videos, very over the top with like my fashion and just who I was online. Mm-hmm. And then I think, you know, I started social media when I was 14 years old. So, and now I'm 24. So it's been 10 years of like kind of, I think I lived a lot of my formative years on a screen. Yeah. And I didn't really know who Arielle Martin was. I only knew who Baby Arielle was. And I knew that she was out there and she was this big personality. And so over time, I had to really figure out who Arielle Martin was. And now I think they've kind of become one because I've gotten more comfortable with who Arielle is. And I was able to put her on screen as Baby Arielle.
I love that answer. And I got to say, you know, I as I was prepping for this episode, I watched a ton of your videos.
What did you watch? Oh, God.
So the one that like I've watched like 20 times is your very recent Stupid Ho.
Yeah, Stupid
Lip Sync. So I know. So you became known back in the day for doing a Stupid Ho
What, you're just laughing at him saying stupid hoe, I'm being Jewish, you know? That's what it's called, right?
Yes, yeah, you're
Nicki
right.
Nicki Minaj, stupid hoe, great song. Great. You did a lip sync on this app Musical.ly, which has since been bought by TikTok and merged into TikTok.
Yes.
And that's how you sort of rose to stardom on that platform.
Yeah.
But then you just did another version of it. And I thought this version was so much better, like miles above your first one.
Thank you.
You can see the growth and you can see, as you're talking about it, like a different like maturity and comfort level.
Thank you.
It like comes across. What I loved about it, I started watching it like 10 times. It's your talent comes through very clear. It's, as you described, like very expressive.
Yeah.
Almost, and I mean this as a compliment, like cartoony.
Yes.
In a really good way. Like, you know, I used to work at Family Guy, so I have like a little bit of animation background.
I just started watching Family Guy. Like,
so you've like just discovered it?
Yeah. So my parents didn't let me watch like, you know, the South Park and the Family Guy, even SpongeBob sometimes. It was interesting. Like,
they let you put yourself online, but you couldn't watch Family
but
Guy.
Family Guy? Okay. No.
And that's where we draw the line.
I just discovered Family Guy.
Welcome
it
to the party.
It is so good.
Yeah, it's the best. It's
hilarious. Incredible.
But anyways, you know, I know a little bit about animation, and in animation, the bigger the eyes, the more expressive the character can be. And you have these big green eyes. And in that video, especially like you've got the lashes going.
Yeah.
The way you like move your eyes so sharply and like the facial
expression. Okay, first I really appreciate your analysis on my Musical.ly because nobody's ever done that before. And I really thank you for it.
You're so welcome. I want to jump back to how you and I met.
Yes.
Which was, we met at least one hostage family visit. I think probably the one I mentioned in the monologue of this show. Do you remember if you were there with Romy's father was speaking?
I might have been, actually. It might have been that one. There was one where I know you were sitting in front of me and we hadn't met yet. But I was like, obviously like a huge fan. I'd seen all of your work. And because, you know, after October 7th, I kind of had to do like a deep dive into what the fuck is going on here. And so you were one of the people I found. And I was like, oh, you know, these tweets and the threads and you just say everything so beautifully. And so I knew who you were. But I have social anxiety, so I probably didn't say hi then. And then where did we meet after that?
So we met at least one or two of those. And then I saw you again at the Nova exhibit for sure in LA. I'm not that active on TikTok.
You don't have to be.
I started it, you know, really for this podcast is why I started. Like we have a TikTok. And I just got a new phone and I can't even re-download it onto the new phone.
Is it not
like blocked?
Oh my gosh, you
can't even get it. So now I'm locked out.
No TikTok for you.
But so when I first met you, I didn't know who you were because I'm not on that platform where you've blown up. Yeah. Your vibe is so humble and unassuming.
Thank you.
Which, you know, you would never know. I was like, all right, who is this person? Oh, 32 million followers. Like, whoa. Is it a credit to your parents a little bit, would you
Absolutely,
say?
Absolutely, my parents. My parents are the most incredible people in the world. They're just really amazing. And like from day one, it's my career has always really been a family affair, which I really appreciate. Like everything I do, my mom goes with me, especially like now I'm an adult and I'm living on my own and it's awesome. But starting when I was younger, she would fly out with me to LA all of the time. My dad, when I was going on tour for the first time, I did a social media tour. My dad, he trailed behind the tour bus in like a Scooby-Doo van, we like to call it.
Uh-huh.
And so my whole life, and especially like with Judaism and Shabbat dinner, it's always been about family. And so they've kind of, I don't know,
it grounds you.
My world. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go into October 7th.
So let's do it.
Help me understand, like, what did your life day-to-day sort of look like leading up to October 7th? And how drastically did that change and how quickly?
I'm from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I grew up in a very diverse neighborhood. And my school was very diverse. And the way I like to put it is that everybody was different, so nobody felt different, really.
That's sort of the goal, right?
Yeah. Everybody was different. People of all different backgrounds, religions. And now looking back, I do recognize that I was one of like three Jewish kids in my grade. I always felt a little different, but it never really strongly occurred to me because my friends were so supportive. And growing up, I did, you know, Shabbat dinner at my Safta and Papa's every Friday. But I never really figured out where my Judaism lay. I knew my Safta and Papas. They were modern Orthodoxy. They kept kosher. I knew my parents. They were a little bit less than my grandparents. They didn't keep kosher, but like on Passover, we'd keep kosher. And then when I moved to LA, I hadn't really found my alignment with Judaism yet.
How old were you when you moved to LA?
I started flying out when I was like 16, 17 for like auditions and work. And then I think permanently settled down when I was like 18, 19, I want to say.
Still relatively young anyways in your Jewish
journey. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But it was always around me growing up. We did, you know, Passover, Rosh Hashanah, Hanukkah, all of the things. And then I moved to LA and I don't know what it was. I hadn't found myself spiritually yet. And I think I'm still going through that journey. But I didn't know what it was yet. I didn't know what I want to do. So I kind of like everything Jewish, I just didn't really think about it. And it's sad for me now, but it wasn't a thing to me. As much as like my softa like nailed it into my head that like you need to marry a Jewish man and you need to do Shabbat and you need to this. It was like, okay, softa, like right. We're fine. Everything's fine. And then October 7th happened. And that was like everything that my grandparents had planted into my brain growing up that I completely had pushed away from came screaming to the surface. And I was like, okay, wait a second. They were right and something's wrong. And so October 7th was really a wake-up call for me. And it was kind of a wake-up call in how I think ignorant I was to all of it. But it happened. And that's when I really was like, okay, I need to go full hands in here and figure out what I can do to help.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like hibernated in my house for like 2 weeks, kind of just completely floored. I was like, what is going on? And so, yeah, my entire world flipped upside down and it really became like, I don't know enough, Ariel. Now you have to do the work and learn as much as possible.
How are you doing that work? What does that look like for you?
I literally got a notebook. I sat down and I watched video after video after video. And I hope I remember most of it now, but it was like, I have notebooks of like timelines of like, okay, 1917,
1933.
Okay, so
deep history
dive. Yeah. I was like, I need to learn because I think when October 7th happened and none of my circle was posting about anything, and I reached out. I was like, hello, what are you guys, what's going on? Why is nobody posting? I was there for you. I posted when you needed help. Well, my Jewish friends posted when you needed help. And now nobody's posting for us. And when they were combative with me about, you know, the history and the facts, and I realized I didn't know anything, I was like, okay, I need to be able to have these conversations. If I'm going to go and be such a staunch supporter, which I absolutely am going to do, I need to know what I'm talking about. And I still don't know. I do my best, but you know.
I've said this before on this show. Yes, arming yourself with information always breeds confidence and is helpful.
Yeah.
But the information should have nothing to do with I'm your friend and I'm going to show up for you when you need me.
I agree with you. I agree 1,000% with you. But I think the problem that I had in the group that I was in was that that didn't matter. And that's where I was really like, oh my God, you people fucking suck.
Yeah, those are not friends you should be having.
And I let them go. I'm not friends with them anymore.
Good.
I was like, no, no, no. But that's what's so sad to me now is that my personal experience should be enough for you. My grandma's from Israel. My whole family lives in Israel. I've been there 3 times. Listen to your Jewish friend. And it's, for some reason, that is not enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's frustrating.
Jews don't count.
No.
Is that on your reading list? Have you read Jews Don't Count
by David Baddiel? No, that's a book. Oh my God, no, I should read it.
Great book. Yeah.
Who's it by?
David Baddiel.
David Baddiel, okay.
Jews Don't Count.
Jews Don't Count.
It's like sort of the one of my like starter kit books.
Really?
For like getting
into. You need to make me a starter kit.
I'll make you a little starter kit.
Because I've done a lot of YouTube and like.
We'll do it right now so everybody can get it. I posted 3 of them. I'm adding a 4th. I would say David Baddiel's Jews Don't Count. And if you do the audiobook, he reads it. It's great.
Oh, love.
Dara Horn's People Love Dead Jews.
I want to read that one.
Really important perspective. She's coming on the show soon. Super psyched about that.
Oh, that's awesome.
She's on my Mount Rushmore of like Jewish thought leaders. Noah Tishby's Israel.
Yes.
I think it's just a really digestible way to sort of understand Israel from the perspective of someone who's Israeli.
Right.
Sarah Hurwitz's Here All Along, I think is a really great sort of intro to Judaism book from someone who's like, I'm going to figure out what Judaism is about, who's not like a rabbi or a scholar or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Like one of just
us. Just a person. It's very conversational and like, it's terrific.
Oh, I love it.
So that's my little starter kit.
Okay, yay, good. I'll get them all.
You mentioned that before October 7th, with your family, you were doing holidays and whatnot. Then you come to LA, and this is very common. Like I've actually heard the same story even on this show of,
yeah.
Then I get to LA, I'm career focused, I'm like finding my way. The Jewish stuff sort of falls away a little bit because mm-hmm. you don't have the built-in community or the friend. Now it's, you gotta like have to make something if you want it. Since October 7th, have you gotten more involved communally or ritualistically or whatever? What does your like day-to-day Jewishness look like?
So it's funny, the thing that I have always aligned most with about Judaism is this, like the ability to ask questions. And so I think every day I'm still, you know, I'm someone who asks questions and I try ask other people questions, ask myself, yeah. ask my family. But my number one is that Judaism is about spreading light, tikkun olam, and being a good person. And, you know, I do practice, I'll go to friends' houses for Shabbat now a lot. Whereas prior to October 7th, that wasn't anything that I thought. I was like, I don't want to go to Shabbat. I spent my whole life going to Shabbat every Friday at my softest house. I don't like, and then now I'm like, I need community. Yeah. I want to be with, because I didn't really have a lot of Jewish friends. And now it was, now I'm, you know, I try my best to show up and be at, go to events. And as much as I'm like, it's always to go and be there for other people. It's always, I think all of us need to feel right now this sense of community.
Totally. It makes total sense.
Yeah.
And I think everybody's feeling that.
Yeah.
What's your fan base been like? I mean, has there been a shift in who your fan base is? Have they been supportive? What's that been?
Prior to October 7th, I think I had some Jewish followers, but not really, because I really didn't talk about Judaism online like a crazy amount. And then after October 7th, when I started speaking out, I lost a lot of followers.
What's a lot look like to somebody with 50 million followers?
I want like hundreds of thousands.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
That's a small percentage.
Yeah. Bye, everyone.
Some.
Yeah.
Some losers. Goodbye. Bye.
But I gained a ton of Jewish followers
right.
and Israeli followers and incredible allies of the Jewish and Israeli community as well. And so that's really shifted. I think my audience has become also a little bit older because I'm speaking about, you know, more mature things right.
You're reaching
now.
People you weren't reaching with right. just the lip sync videos or whatever.
Right before yeah. I was just like, oh. But I'm really happy about it because I before October 7th, I wasn't, like we talked about at the beginning, like I wasn't Ariel online. I was baby Ariel. I was a persona. I was putting on a mask when I go and I wasn't really myself. And now I've been able to really say, okay, this is me. This is fully me. Because Judaism is such a massive part of who I am. And I've discovered it's such a massive part of who I am. And I think I put it away for so long. So I was like, okay, we don't have to talk about religion. But I'm like, no, this is who I am. It's where I come from. And so now I'm able to fully be myself. And with that, I've gained such an incredible group of followers who, you know, young Jewish girls specifically, who I think really feel lost right now, who are struggling at school, who are struggling with their peers. I get a lot of messages from girls in Israel who don't know how to navigate certain things. And so I'm grateful that I've built really a beautiful community of Jewish people who are like, okay, we can talk together on this page and feel safe. And that's what makes me happy.
Does it feel better, would you say, to be this full, authentic version of yourself?
Absolutely,
right?
Yes. 100%. And that's why I think I was like so frustrated with a lot of like my other Jewish friends, I won't name names, who like after October 7th didn't speak out and they have a platform. And I'm like, guys, you're going to feel so much better if you put it all out there online. You're going to lose the people who you never needed in the first place. And you're going to gain the people who will really look to you for comfort and peace. So I think it's really freeing to just be able to be yourself. It's like, why not?
I hope people are paying attention to what you just said. It's something that a lot of my guests have said on the show. It's something that I try to always highlight through my guests on the show, because to a person, everybody speaks of how it feels better. It's more authentic. You're gaining new opportunities, new followers.
Yeah.
That fear of what you're going to lose is, you know, so diminished by the reality of what you're going to gain.
Exactly. 100%.
Yeah.
That's it.
But about the fan base, like, let's put the new ones aside for a second. What about the ones who have been there since the beginning and liked you for, you know, what you had been doing?
Yeah.
Are you able to hear a response from that portion of your audience specifically? And how are they responding to this new, fuller Ariel?
I've been really grateful that I think I've, of course, like I've lost a few of them, but the ones who have been there since the beginning, they have really stuck by me and I really appreciate it. Like just these accounts of like, I don't know who's behind the screen, but I love them. Like,
right.
You know, before October 7th, they were posting like Ariel's new TikTok video. And then after October 7th, they're posting Ariel's new TikTok video talking about Israel. And so like just that time, I'm like, this is probably a 13-year-old, like, and just that level of support, I'm so grateful for.
That's
because
powerful.
It's just, I'm like, you know, you don't have to do it. And even though I really hope people do support us as much as humanly possible, but they do it. And I'm really appreciative of those people because I think allies are, you know, when we're Jewish and or Israeli, like obviously we have a connection to it, but I think it's really, really powerful when I see someone who isn't connected in that way and who's kind of like, I know how hard it is right now to speak out against the anti-Semitism. I know how hard it is to speak up for Israelis right now. So when you don't have a connection to it and you do it anyway, knowing the risks, I think that's, I really just love those people.
Oh, it feels absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
It's like the greatest sign of love and support that you could ask for.
Right. I'm like, you don't have to do it, but you're doing it.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
Yeah.
Shout out to all the allies.
Yeah, we love you.
What about like in terms professionally of like brand deals or business opportunities, whatever, have those shifted, changed at all?
Absolutely. And I think the funny part about those is that they'll never explicitly say it. Like which I never expected them to. But it's like, it's always like, okay, we've decided to go a different route because of timing. I'm like, there's no problem with timing.
Right.
Like, my schedule is open. We can do it.
Right.
Oh, we decided to go a different way because of blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, come on. Like, okay, just at least be upfront with it. And I'm like, mm-hmm. At least, you know, we can have a conversation and I can show you if I haven't made myself clear online about that I'm a person who wants peace and I'm loving and I'm like, then we can let's have a conversation, but they kind of like just, you know, they don't say anything. So it's hard to.
I feel like part of it's just like, you know, they have to be so like annoyingly neutral.
I know.
So it's like, it might not matter what you're advocating for, but the fact that you are like talking about something.
Talking about anything.
Means like, well, you know, she can't sell this lipstick if she's talking about something that isn't lipstick.
Right.
You know?
You're totally right. It just makes me sad.
Totally. It still sucks.
Yeah.
And I'm just, you know, I'm just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Have you gotten like any new opportunities from brands or companies who are like, oh my God, I love what you're doing?
A couple who are like Israeli founded, have Jewish founders, but not to the extent that it was prior to October. Like,
are you feeling the hurt?
I was hurt for a little bit because I used to get, for example, acting wise, people don't want, they might not want someone who is like we just talked about, who has totally on one side in their movie, in their film. And so auditions, they slow down. And like brand deals, they slow down. And I was hurt for a while because I was like, wait a second, my whole life I thought of the next 50 years doing this one thing. But I've figured out, first of all, the Israeli and Jewish community is so incredibly supportive. And that's what I love so much about us is that we kind of all rally behind each other at this moment because I think we're all feeling the same thing.
Yeah.
My boyfriend actually texted me this morning about a teacher, one of his teachers at a school who lost their job or left because of the anti-Semitism at school. And so we're all kind of going through this thing together and we've mm-hmm. able to rally with each other. But I've decided and I've had to for my own sanity to like be creative in the ways that I do my job.
I will say for the acting side of it, it slowed down for everybody. I mean, the whole industry slowed down. All the auditions went away. The production contracted. So just to make you feel better, I wouldn't read too much into that part. Everybody is struggling with
that. I think you're totally right. I think, but there is like my little like insecure part of me.
Because no one's
like,
given you an indication that it's a Jew thing, right?
No.
Yeah. I think it's probably just part of the general
slowdown.
Yeah. What about your friend group? Like we talked about sort of your influencer friends. Were those your IRL friends too? Or you had a different group of friends? And like, how have they responded since?
Different group of friends. That's a whole conversation.
We got time.
Okay, great. Living in LA, a lot of my friends were/are very, how do I put it? Like very social justice group of people. Mm-hmm. And so when October 7th happened, I was really, really angry at them because I was like, wait a second, you have used your platform prior to other social injustices. When you see discrimination, you speak up about it online. You use your platform no matter how many followers you post about it. Why is it different now that because it's Jews, because it's Israelis? And so I really struggled with that. And I did lose a few friends. And it was some friends, they didn't want to be my friend anymore. And they didn't want to, like, they couldn't be in the same room as me. And like my appearance, I guess, would spark anger for some. And then for some people, I decided, I was like, look, I can't do this anymore because I don't know. It's like the same as like the followers online who unfollowed after October 7th. If you're not going to stand by who I am as a human being, I don't want you in my life. I can't. Yeah. Like, this is like my ancestry. This is who I am as a human. This is my whole life.
What do you want me to do about it?
What do you want me to do? And so if you are unable to stand up for me online, like, I don't trust you to stand up for me. If you hear someone at a bar saying something mean about Jews, I don't know if you're going to stand up for me. I don't know if you're going to stand up for me when you hear somebody talking badly about Israelis because, you know, you have such a warped view of Israel. I don't trust you. With that, I've found such a beautiful group of people in the Jewish and Israel space who kind of like, we're all going through the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
For sure. I think it's such a sickness in our society that I can't even be in the same room with you thing because you and I have a different understanding of a certain situation.
Right.
I just, it's a shame that we feel like that's the way that we have to or are supposed to behave today.
And it sucks too is that these are people who don't necessarily have a connection to the conflict.
Of course not. They have none at all.
No connection.
Right.
I'm like, okay, so you're going to not be in the same room as the person whose Safta was born in Israel in 1947, whose whole family is there right now and hiding in shelters. You don't want to be...
Right.
How? I don't understand. It's I don't
problem.
Get it.
It's a real problem.
Has it happened to you too?
No.
That's good.
The majority of my friends are old friends.
Nice.
From Jewish day school, Jewish summer camp, or like a couple from jobs that I've done a long time ago. And the ones that I'm like still close with are the people who like I'm still tight with them because they're like genuine, wonderful human beings.
Right.
Who have pretty much all been supportive for the most part. And I like, there's one friend I had who like we were able to have a little discussion or whatever and like, it's exactly what it should be, where she had a certain understanding, I had an understanding, and there was nothing personal in it. And it was never like, if we don't reach my understanding, we're not going to be friends anymore.
And that's something that I've really been like struggling with recently, because like I'm like, Israel and Judaism, it's such a massive part of my life. And I'm like, I don't know how to navigate those friendships with people who like might super duper disagree with me. Cause I'm like, I don't know how to not bring it up. Like it's my whole world and I don't know how to not talk about it.
For me, it really is about like who this person is. And like, if they are the kind of person who deserves to be your friend, they're the kind of person who goes, help me understand that. Or like, you know, I might think whatever, but like, I still want to come to Shabbat dinner at your house with your parents. And like, you know, we can have a debate later or whatever, you know, it won't get in the way of the personal.
Right.
The same way that like you should be able to get along with someone who voted for Trump if you don't vote for Trump.
And right.
You know, we should be able to still be buddies.
Yeah.
I want to know more about your family.
Yes.
Your family has an interesting geographical and cultural heritage. So you are as Latin American as you are Jewish.
Absolutely.
So tell me about that.
Yeah. So my dad is from Panama. And I actually just recently had the amazing... I had
opportunity?
The opportunity to go to Panama with the Tel Aviv Institute with Chen.
How did they end up in Panama? Like, did they do this for you?
It felt like it. I was like, thank you so much, Chen. Thank you so much, Shani.
Had you been before?
Yeah, I went once before.
Only once?
Yeah, when I was younger. So I didn't really remember it, but I loved it so much. And so it was kind of like this blending of like both of my worlds.
Yeah.
His whole family is from Spain and Panama. And then my mom's mom, my Safta, is from Israel. So my Safta's whole side, they're all in Israel right now. Hi, everybody.
Shalom.
Shalom. And then my mom's dad, my papa, he was from Cuba. So that whole side is Cuban.
Did they meet in Israel?
They met in New Jersey.
Oh, they met when they had both already moved to America.
Yes. I'm like 99% sure.
That makes sense.
Yes. And what's funny about them is that they actually met, and then my grandpa engaged to my grandma in 10 days. And so
that's how it goes, right? I think my grandpa proposed to my grandma, I think on their first date or second right. date or something.
But I really have like such a blend of people in my family, which I'm so grateful for. And then my dad, he converted to Judaism. So my mom's Jewish and then my dad converted. It's a cool blend.
That's really cool. So yeah. Unique. Is your papa Jewish?
Yes, he is. So
Cuban Jews?
He's a Cuban.
How big of a community is that?
He was a part of this organization in Cuba called Hanaor Hatzioni, which is like youth Zionists of Cuba. And from what I've read, he wrote a book about his life. I haven't read it yet. I need to read it.
You gotta read it. Put that on the top of the list.
I know. I have so many books and I'm like,
I gotta get some audiobooks.
I go straight to like, I want romance and fiction.
I get it.
I'm like, I have to read about love. But he was in Hanaor Hatzioni in Cuba, and there were like 150 members in his chapter, and he like worked his way up and he ended up becoming the head of the organization. And so Zionism was always a big part of my life because of my grandpa, my papa, and then my safta born in Israel. And so I think that's why a lot of like my ignorance to the entire conflict prior to October 7th was a thing, because in my household, Israel and Zionism was who can debate that?
Right.
Israel is literally like the best place on planet Earth, which I still think it is. But to me, it was never like, I lived in a bubble of like my family who were just the biggest, proudest, most incredible Zionists, Jews, Israelis in the world. And so I'm really grateful for that.
How is your mom's experience as a Jew different from yours, would you say, the way that she grew up?
My safta and papa, they used to be very, very, very Orthodox. Very, very modern Orthodox.
So, well, you said they were modern Orthodox, but you're saying they were even more observant even than what you knew them to be.
Yes, okay. Right. I mean, so going over before they passed, it was, you know, separate, what's it called? Cabinets with all the...
For like meat and milk stuff?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like different dishwashers. You had to wash certain things at certain times, like all of the things.
I live right now in an Orthodox neighborhood. I'm not Orthodox, but
do
my
you really?
House. Yes. And so the house that we bought has two dishwashers fridges. And
you're probably like, great, more dishes can
it's
be done.
Unbelievable. And I have a whole fridge basically for beverages. It's like the greatest.
That's so good.
Anyways, please continue.
Move into a kosher house.
Yeah, no, seriously, the Orthodox house is all, and the best thing, and then I'll let you get back to it, is in the master, I have a bathroom and my wife has a bathroom.
Oh.
And hers is like feminine and mine is masculine. And they're like,
I love it.
The greatest thing. We're about to move and we're going to have to like start sharing a bathroom again after 5 years.
Oh,
I was like, I don't want to see you, babe. Like, yeah. You do your thing.
You go to
I want to be
on
my
bathroom.
Thing. I know.
It's kind of genius.
It's really, I can't believe it's like never been done anywhere else.
Right. But like, hello.
Amazing innovation.
Why don't we do that?
By the Orthodox.
I know.
Yeah.
Kudos
builders
to
take
you.
Note.
Yeah.
Okay. So your grandparents.
So I knew them as always very Orthodox in my head.
Sure.
And then, but growing up, my mom, it was like, I think way, way, way more than what it was. And so she's had, I think, an interesting experience of like, first of all, watching her parents slowly become less Orthodox. I don't want to say like watered down, but like slowly becoming less Orthodox. And then having kids and figuring out, okay, like, how do I want to raise them? Yeah. And like her own path with Judaism. And I think as a whole, my family, where we really, really align and connect is with tradition. We are massive on, you know, still to this day, like every holiday we get together, like Rosh Hashanah, all of the things we always get to, like that has always stuck. But I think where we have all kind of are still in this journey of like my mom, she used to grow up in synagogue every Friday, every Saturday. And, you know, you keep Shabbat the whole nine yards. And so now all of us, I think, are collectively being like, okay, where do we align spiritually in that world? I have like an uncle who is more religious and then an aunt who is less religious. But I think that's what I love about Judaism.
Yeah.
Is it's like none of these things, whichever way, wherever you land, is none make you any more or less Jewish.
That's certainly what we believe on this show.
Yeah, and that's what I love so much about Judaism and like my parents is that they always taught me to question.
Do you have any favorite family holiday traditions that jump out at you?
Yes. So for Passover, there's a lot of kids in the family. And so Passover, what I've always really loved when my mom started taking over Passover, when she started hosting. started hosting Passover. She does it in the form of a play.
Oh.
My mom, she writes an entire play for it and she does songs and
is it the same play every year? She updates it each time.
Oh, it's different every year.
Like totally different?
Totally different.
Wow. Yeah. That's a lot of work and effort.
Oh, yeah. And like someone's the Pharaoh and stuff. Like she gives everybody a role.
Everybody has a part.
Yeah. But it makes it fun and
that's way more fun.
I love it. So
that's great.
Much. My Safta, when she started doing that, she was very upset because my Safta always did it very by the book, which I also think is beautiful and incredible. But my mom, you know, she was like, I'm going to do it my way. And then I'm sure I'll one day do it my way. And it'll just keep.
Creative. I love it.
Yes, but I love it.
Yeah, we're always like peppering in little things and songs or whatever, but not like a full on play. That feels like such it's like a much faster way to get through the story, but B, like a way more engaging way to go through it than I'm going to read a paragraph. You're going to read a paragraph.
Because then people zone out, which is
That's not the point.
Right.
You want engagement.
And so we're like, okay, we want to learn. We want to be here. We want everybody to feel involved. How do we do it in a way and teach people in a way that feels fun? And
I feel like that's sort of at the crux of a lot of the internal Jewish world organizational conflict is like, what's more important, doing it by the book the way it's always been done or altering it to be more engaging and actually have it create the effect that it's meant to create in as many people as possible?
My dad always says that like, because he converted to Judaism and so it's like he did a lot of the studying and whatever. Yeah. And he's always like, Judaism has the worst PR. And like
everybody says that. I mean, we know.
Yeah, like we need to like, okay, and that's why I think social media has become such a great tool in like, talking about Judaism and showing our different traditions and how everybody celebrates who they are. Because I'm like, okay, we have to show it in a different way because what we've been doing, I think it's worked, but also some of the things haven't worked.
I'm thinking about it now as you're saying it. And I actually don't think that it's like we have a bad PR.
Yeah.
We've had like no PR.
No PR.
we're so small. We're tiny. It's like, no, how are you going to get 99% of the world to know about the little 0.2%?
Right.
You know, that's a tall order.
But I do think like now a lot of us modern Jews have woken up and been okay, wait a second. We have to start talking. I think now we've probably become Judaism's PR us.
Yeah, definitely.
But you're right.
Part of it.
There is no PR. They were so small.
No PR, and so many Jews are like, or historically and currently are about like keeping their head down and blending in as opposed to saying like, hey, I'm proud of who I am and here's what we are. And now you should understand what we are.
Right, exactly.
So it's like a twofold problem. Since October 7th, incredibly vocal and open on your social media, as we've discussed. I mean, even putting your middle name out there so people know you're super Jewish. Really cute photos of you lighting candles and doing Kiddush as a child. Again, if you're watching, you're seeing them right now. If you're listening, gonna have to look in the show notes. Did you make a decision like, I'm gonna start posting more Jewish stuff? Or was it just like, oh, this, I'm excited to do it. Was it natural? Or was there a thought process?
There wasn't a thought process. There was a lot of anger, if I'm being honest. There was a lot of like, hey guys, because especially coming from like this Gen Z, like you said, we hate Gen Z and I'm very mad at Gen Z too.
I was the one arguing to not be prejudiced against Gen
Z. I know, but I'm like, I'm the one, like I was angry.
Yeah.
Because my life was looking at my phone and seeing people speak out against social injustice, seeing people be so staunchly supportive of their communities, other communities. And so when October 7th happened and it was silence across the board, I was just furious. I was like, wait a second. When the bully was beating you up, I pushed them away. And then now all of a sudden we have a bully and I don't see anyone there for us. And now I say that now, that's how it felt at the time. And now looking, I'm like, we have such an incredible support system. But at the time, it was like a subconscious, like, I hate you all, if I'm being honest. It was a subconscious, like, I hate you all. I'm pissed. I am going to start posting. I was posting, I think, like 20 things on my Instagram story a day of like, I'm sure I've posted you millions of times of like just things that I aligned with and education on Israel and Judaism. And then as weeks went on, I was like, okay, wait a second. Like there really is not, we have a community, but it's not as big as I would have hoped it was. And especially in the TikTok space. Yeah. You go on TikTok. Oh my God. TikTok is like a breeding site for anti-Semitism. Sorry. I love TikTok. I really do. But like the things that are allowed to be said on this platform and the things that TikTok pushes out, I was like, no wonder nobody agrees with me because I'm one and my things are getting suppressed and everybody else's, you know, anti-Israel stuff for some reason, that's all being seen. And so I'm like, I have to speak out.
What do you think is different about you where you feel this anger and this frustration? You go, oh, I'm going to get loud about it. Mm-hmm. Or so many other people are like afraid.
I've battled with this a lot because there is part of me that at first I was really, really angry. I was like, fuck you for being afraid. Like, I am so mad. Like, do you not see what's going on in Israel? How can you even say that right now? You need to speak out. I don't care. And now there is, I really, really do understand social media and this loudness and proudness not being everyone's form of advocacy. And something I always like to talk to people about is like, your advocacy does not have to look like mine. No. I know I go on and I'm loud and obnoxious and I am say what's on my mind and I post constantly. But your advocacy, if you are a more introverted person, if you do have a community of people who aren't supportive, if you do feel scared for your life right now, your advocacy can look very different. Like it can be as simple as putting on a Magen David on your ring. I don't, anything.
Right.
Or going to school and if you hear anti-Semitism, speak up when you hear it. Or speaking at a local event. Or even hosting a Shabbat dinner with your non-Jewish friends and saying like, hey, come over. What's really important is that we do all kind of, you know, really look at our space and say, okay, wait a second. I figured out early on, I was like, okay, I have a following. That's where I can shine. I have this following. I don't know why I have it, what I did to deserve it, but it's here and this is where I can use it. What's your space and how can you advocate in your own space?
I want to push even harder into that. So you have done what like every Jew wishes people with your platform would do, which is feel that responsibility. So I have all these followers. It's my responsibility to use this platform to advocate.
Yeah.
What do you think, this is what I really want to get, is like, what is different about Arielle Martin that she goes there and others with the same platforms don't feel that responsibility and don't feel like they need to do what you clearly feel the need to do?
First of all, it's been instilled in my brain since I was born. Like, my Safta, like, before she passed, like, before, while she was not able to walk and she wasn't able, she could barely speak anymore, she's still, up until like the week before, was like, when are you taking me to Israel? To my mom, when are you taking me to Israel? I want to go to Israel. And she couldn't walk. She couldn't. And my mom, like my poor mom, like we can't. But that was the community I grew up in. Mm. And I also think a lot of people now, a lot of my Jewish friends have this ability to separate themselves from it. And, you know, I think a lot of my anger now at people is like, it's not happening to them. Therefore, why should they get involved? I'm sure where we are different is like we see ourselves in all of it. Like to me, it's like I'm Jewish and I think of my grandparents who fought for me and my ancestors and I don't separate myself from it. And so I think people now, it's like this line that they're able to say, wait a second, this thing isn't happening to me, around me, near me. I'm not angry, which makes me angry. But yeah.
If I could distill what you just said, I mean, what I'm hearing you say is like the foundation that you have, like in your core identity, is so strong.
Yeah.
It was already so fleshed out and so intrinsic to who you are, where perhaps for other people, maybe it just didn't hold that value.
Yeah.
And then the moment hit and it wasn't there.
Right, exactly.
You said that you have connected, especially with a lot of young girls mm-hmm. online who are looking up to you. Do you have any specific stories that pop out as something that really moved you?
I spoke at an event and I remember there was this group of kids who came up to me afterwards after my panel.
How old are we ballpark?
I want to say like ninth grade.
Okay, probably. So like 14, 15, yes. 13.
And they came up to me and they told me about the anti-Semitism at their school and how nobody was speaking out, that kids were drawing swastikas on locker doors and, you know, hate the Jews everywhere. Ugh. And they started their own group at school for Jewish kids, for allies, for Israeli kids to advocate, not necessarily just against anti-Semitism, but against all forms of hate. And they're all Jewish, so I'm sure the foundation is against anti-Semitism. But, and that how, you know, my speaking out really inspired them to do it. And
that's awesome.
I'm like, that's why I have to do it. Like,
yeah.
I think I kind of sometimes feel discouraged because I am like, okay, am I actually changing people's minds? Like, I don't know. And so, but I've accepted, like, okay, maybe I'm not changing people's minds, because I hate to say it, but a lot of people who are already so far the other way, it's hard to, I think, reel them back in with one 15-second video.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the reason I do what I do is to make those kids feel seen and heard and feel like, okay, if she's doing it and she's, and they see the hate comments, and if she's doing it, then we can do it. And I'm like, that's all I can ask for, to make sure that these kids, like, they don't feel alone.
That's amazing. The hate comments you get, do mm-hmm. those bug you still? Or are they like, whatever? Or how do they hit you?
Now it doesn't bother me as much anymore. But there are times where I do, I let it get to me. And I get so, it makes me sad, but I really let it get to me. Like, because when people start talking about, like, my family and my brother and my friends and my boyfriend, and they go into detail about disturbing things, I'm like, I'm human too. And I see it, and I'm sitting at home alone and I'm like, I'm scared. I hate these people. But with that, I've also learned how to turn it off quickly and like not let myself go down this rabbit hole. Like after October 7th, when the hate first started flooding in, again, because I was so ignorant to all of it, I didn't know that there was going to be a lot of hate. I was kind of like, oh, again, this is what I always knew. I such a Zionist family. Everybody's Israeli. Everybody loves Jewish people. Like, how mad can people get? And I was wrong. So when it first happened, I was caught off guard, but then it kind of, I learned how to put it away and be like, okay, we have to press forward because this is the reason that we do what we do. Yeah.
All right. We're going to jump into a little lightning round to wrap things up here. Favorite Jewish holiday?
Oh, I want to say Shabbat.
Great one.
Thank you.
We love Shabbat on this show.
Yeah.
Jewish custom that sounds interesting, but you haven't gotten into or know anything about yet.
I never saw my family wrap tefillin, and I'm a girl, so I don't do it, but but it's something that it's still like, wow, what is that thing? And so I don't know much about it.
Well, next time you're on the street in like Washington Square Park in New York or something, some Chabad guy's going to, you know, be there and you ask him if you could do it.
Yeah.
Favorite Jewish heartthrob?
Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, he's Jewish?
Yes.
Timothy Chalamet. Favorite Jewish diva?
Jewish diva. This is a great one. Is Trisha Paytas Jewish now, officially?
I don't know who that is.
What?
Trisha Paytas?
What? Do you guys know Trisha Paytas? I think, okay, so she's married to an Israeli man. And She is, I love her. She's, I think, converted to Judaism and then maybe converted out of Judaism and then probably now converted into, she's a Jewish diva in my book.
What does she do? Like, why do you know
you
her?
You have to, okay.
I'm gonna look her up.
I can't even say anything. I won't spoil any of the
Trisha Paytas. Name one animal you're leaving off Noah's Ark.
Oh gosh, lizards.
Lizards, see ya.
Yeah.
What's your most commonly used Hebrew and or Yiddish word?
Is kvetch a Yiddish word? Okay.
So yeah, you say that one a lot?
My softo would always go, you're being a kvetch.
There you go. Last, you inspire young people so much on your platform, as we've discussed. I want you to help inspire some of the older generations on this platform. What is your call to action for the non-Gen Zers who are listening or watching this right now?
Ooh, I think similar to what I talked about before, you know, my platform is social media, but find if you are not advocating right now, if you're, which is okay, start today. And it can be the tiniest thing of just buying challah at the store.
Yeah.
Just find a way to advocate or to get in touch with your Judaism. It can be small.
It can be small.
Yeah.
Ariel, thank you so much. This was a blast.
Thank you. This was awesome.
Thanks to Ariel for everything she does and for sharing her story so openly with us today. Bit of news, I'm launching a newsletter online. So head over to jonahplatt.com, scroll to the bottom, and input your email address so you don't miss our first installment. Also, this is our 20th episode, which feels like a milestone worth mentioning. We're at over 100,000 downloads from countries all over the world, around 20,000 households per episode on JBS, and thousands more of you watching on YouTube. I couldn't be more grateful for your engagement and support, and I love how much you all love the show. Here's to the next 20 together and beyond. I'll see y'all back here for the next Jewtastic episode of Being Jewish with me, Jonah Platt.
Big ups to everyone who makes this show possible every week. My executive producer, Matthew Jones, story producer, Sean Livyashvili, and editor, Mike O'Brien of Rainbow Creative, consulting producer, Bethany Mandel, research associate, Samantha Greenwald, my amazing executive assistant, Josie Rothschild, social media manager, Yuval Yosha, and graphic designer extraordinaire, Noah Bell. Most of all, thanks to you, dear listeners. We even stuck around to listen to all these credits. And I freaking love you guys.